enact hate crime legislation, new hate crime legislation, but enforce hate crime legislation that's already on the books. We believe that there will now be policies that will be inclusive of trans folks, again, being able to join the military. There will be protections in the workplace and in education. We believe that there will be more of a sense of equity when it comes to
legislation. We're going to have to leave it there. Tori, thanks so much. Human Rights Campaign Director of Community Engagement. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Sorry, Amy, didn't mean to race you out of here. It's 6 o'clock. And you listen to WUSB Stony Brook. It's Tuesday night time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm over here.
You are over there. It's 2 days before Thanksgiving.
48 hours,
yeah. A lot of people are counting down. This programming note, we will not be on next week. If plans stay firm.
What's on instead?
I don't know if you can hear that. That's a high-speed train going by. We'll get to that later. What's on next week? A basketball game.
Oh, that's exciting.
Well, it is exciting because Stony Brook actually is moving forward with their basketball season, both men's and women's. No audience, though. Well, except for the people who listen to the radio. We'll see how that works out. But next week we will not be on because of that. Unless they change their minds, in which case, you know, we'll see what happens.
It'll be like a short show or something?
No, it won't be a show at all, because I think the game starts at 5:45 instead of 6:45, in the past. So since we're on from 6 to 7, that doesn't leave any time for us.
We're not on call or anything?
Well, we might be on call.
Like emergency.
It depends, you know. Hopefully we'll find out before the game begins if it's not going to be on.
Well, you'll tell me, though.
I'll try if I can find you. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's good. That's important, at least.
So this week, and we don't have the other show tomorrow, so we got sort of a little vacation here. We have the holiday coming up. It's the most stressful Thanksgiving in history. Maybe the first one was more stressful for some people. You were asking me some questions about Thanksgiving earlier, weren't you?
Well, why do we celebrate it? I mean, I think... Is it ethical to celebrate it?
We celebrate it, Kyle, because we are given the day off from school and from work.
No. That doesn't cut it for me.
That's enough for me.
I think the why is because we inherited a tradition, and we can't bring ourselves to really confront it. Now, what I'm taking away from the holiday and my forced celebration...
It's a giving holiday, Kyle, not a taking holiday.
Historically speaking, I don't know if the facts... follow that logic.
All right, well, call it Thanks-taking, then.
If you want to call...
That's good, Thanks-taking.
If you want to call it logic...
Where are you going for Thanks-taking this? Yeah, that sort of says...
But my takeaway from the whole kit and caboodle, to use a phrase, is that we need to be more mindful. No, not mindful. No, I'm not going to use
more
that.
More mindful.
We need to be careful when we explore. And I think it's necessary as we continue on as a human race, exploring the confines of our universe, known and unknown worlds.
Yeah, Carl Sagan, get to the end. What?
Well, we should be careful about our conquests and our achievements. And maybe tread lightly because of our terrible, terrible past here in the U.S.
Well, yeah, you pretty much summed it all up, for sure. But what do you suggest for people who are here now?
Well, it's not for me to suggest.
Feeling somewhat guilty for how we got
here.
I'm
not saying I have the answers that we should or should not do something. I'm saying be thoughtful in your thinking of, you know, the sort of absurdity of how the holiday came about.
Right.
Especially if you're conflicted. If you think about it, it should be part of all of that thoughtfulness that's inherent in the onus that is celebrating this day. For some people, it's just a cool meal or, like, you know, a challenge, which in a lot of views, for me, it's been reduced to. It really is this kind of meal that, and if you think about it, it's kind of cool. Many people are doing the same thing.
Slaughtering turkeys.
Well, no, they're already slaughtered. They come pre-slaughtered. But all of these turkeys, carcass... No, it's kind of morbid if you think of it. There's a lot of meat and preparations and vegetables and bounty. There you go. There's the tie that binds. The bounty that is... agriculture and community and sharing. We're going to share this meal. We're going to share this time preparing things.
We're going to share a deadly disease. I'm sorry, I had to say it. Somebody has to say it.
That's if everybody keeps the mouth coverings and the hygiene going. But I'm saying the overarching background theme, along with appropriate distancing and staying within your current household configuration. In other words, not going outside the confines of that too much and too unnecessarily. But all of that said, I think it can mean a lot of other things to people, but people should consider our future exploration, because there's a lot of good and bad that came of what was,
right,
and that this holiday came about. But in the future, as we continue as a species to explore, let's be careful. Let's remember the mistakes as well as the fortune and the things that we're so thankful for, and in the founding of this country and the modern
what you're saying world. Is that Thanksgiving can be a time to reflect upon the negative as well as the positive. We can celebrate the holiday and make it kind of a teaching event as well, and not just simply follow blindly for something that may or may not be true.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a bit of a dogma that we can get wrapped up in and not be critical going forward of how we tell the story of this holiday and our emerging. Western civilization has virtues, and America and the sort of conquest, the founding of America, is part of that to a degree, to a big degree, I think, for a lot of people, but it is not without its foibles, and we need to recognize that as well going forward, because these habits, these traditions, these things we tell ourselves, the lore of exploration and colonization, the colonies were the emergence and the sort of result of pilgrims landing in the United States. We've made our missteps in continuing that colonization of this planet, and as we move to other worldly bodies and realms, I think that it's important to bring some of those lessons along and not, you know, do more damage than good in our exploration.
You, as another train goes whizzing by, you seem to think that we're going to be colonizing space. Is that what I'm getting out of this? Because
I didn't say it. You said it.
Well,
I just said that whatever exploring we're doing in the future,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe it's, you know, the bottom of the ocean.
Well, it's not going to be the Jersey Shore. It's going to be probably be someplace else.
I don't know. There's a lot of species there, I think, that have yet to be classified and unearthed.
Did you ever think, Kyle, in your human-centric perspective, that maybe the other race will come here and colonize us?
You mean the turkeys are going to
not
hunt
turkeys.
Us and cook us?
Martians or whatever you want to call them, from other planets.
Oh, right, that.
Yeah, we are damn lucky that we haven't been noticed. Because, let me tell you, I've seen a lot of TV, and there's all kinds of nightmares out there that you don't want to mess with.
Hmm.
And if they come to Earth, there's going to be a reckoning.
Well, I'm not saying there was not resistance to Columbus and the early explorers when they reached North America. I mean, when they arrived.
Yeah, victims of genocide tend to resist.
I think there's... let's not... sugarcoat that, and I mean, perhaps we need to dig deeper in that history. But
yeah, since
these are all the things I'm saying go into,
right.
Like, let's it's not just, you know, a parade and a bunch of...
I think what we're saying is that, yes, we can acknowledge the fact that our country was born on genocide and had a sort of slavery theme going through most of it.
Yeah,
and all kinds of racism and ignorance that has persisted since then. But that doesn't mean we can't celebrate on this day once a year, except for the fact that we have a global pandemic right now, which pretty much dictates that we shouldn't be celebrating it, at least not in the same way that we have done before. And those damn trains keep going by.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if we postpone it, what are we postponing? It's not like a religious thing where it follows a holiday and a calendar that's, like, biblical.
It's just, it's dates. That's all it is.
It was a made-up thing, and that hence my question. Is it ethical to even be celebrating, or are we all just engaging in, like, a collective gorging?
Okay, first of all, it's always ethical to celebrate something. It's what you're celebrating that that you need to define. So if
I was just trying to put a spin on it.
If I want to celebrate the good things that I see about this country and about where we've moved and what has changed, then that's how I will celebrate Thanksgiving. I don't have to buy into the propaganda that's passed down through the decades and centuries. So I think we need to each define Thanksgiving for ourselves and say, this is why I am celebrating. And it's got nothing to do with applauding, colonizing another place or massacring people or anything like that, but rather looking to the future. How can we make this place better? Do we believe in this place at all? I imagine most of us do, and if we do, then we should figure out a way to move forward in a positive manner. But with the whole pandemic thing going on, we do have to change the way we're doing it this year. And I implore people, if you are considering going to see your family that does not already live with you, please reconsider that. And you know what? Tell them that we're the ones that convinced you, all right? Give out our email address, which is otw@2600.com. OTW stands for off the wall at 2600.com. Blame us. Say that you were going to visit them, but you listened to this radio show that convinced you that it was not safe. And if they have any problem with that, they can write to us, yell at us, do whatever, and we'll address the issues maybe on the radio or something like that. And we will hopefully be able to convince them, as we've already convinced you, that getting together with your loved ones that you do not see on a day-to-day basis is too risky at this point. We are seeing exactly what we were warned about months ago. We're seeing it happen now. The rates are skyrocketing. In some parts of the country, they're out of hospital beds. You cannot get an ICU bed in Arizona, in North Dakota. I think Colorado is also one. I saw a story just today. Long Island on track to hit 18% coronavirus positivity rate. And that's according to the governor today, speaking from Wyandanche Wheatley Heights Ambulance Corps, where the state is distributing free turkeys. You know, Cuomo gets it for doing everything, for whatever he says. I'm reading criticism about how dare he say that there's a 149% increase in coronavirus cases, and not say that that's because of increased testing. Maybe so, but, you know, increased death, that's not because of increased testing. Giving away turkeys, how dare you give away turkeys when you should be doing other things instead, and this is just, who's paying for those turkeys? It's all kinds of hatred constantly. It's almost like Cuomo is the virus instead of COVID. The hatred with which you see people just tearing into whatever he says, and I'm not saying this guy has gotten it right throughout the entire period. I heard him at the beginning saying this isn't going to be a big deal. But he got the message, and he changed his tune, and he has been pretty much letting people know this is what's going to happen, this is what you have to do. You may not like the message, but most everything that he has said has happened. And to blame him for we will explain why these trains are going by in a couple of minutes. To blame him for what's happening to restaurants and to stores. I was watching Canadian TV earlier. They have some of the same issues up there. But it's interesting. The degree with which they have the problem is a fraction. For instance, Maine. I believe the population of Maine is about 1.4 million. It's right next to the province of New Brunswick, which has a population roughly half that. Over the weekend, Maine had 230 new cases in one day, which is a lot. New Brunswick, again, half the population next door, 23. New Brunswick was more upset than Maine because for them, that was an all-time high. Now, what is so different about those two places? They're right next to each other. One is half the size, population-wise. Okay, fine. So instead of 230, should have been 115 if the scale holds. But it was nowhere close to that. And they are more upset. So in Canada, they are extremely concerned as well. They've done relatively well, and they're still doing much better compared to us, but they are taking it far more seriously. But I saw this one restaurateur saying that, okay, you know, we shut down like they told us to shut down, and the rate still went up. So what good was shutting down? You know, it's like you get a flu shot and you catch the flu anyway, and you say, what good was the flu shot? Or there's all kinds of parallels that you can give to that statement, but it's completely ridiculous to say that because we got sick anyway, the precautions we're taking were useless. No, they weren't. You probably would have had a rate multiple times. You would have been more like us had you not taken those precautions. Okay, I got to say, all these high-speed trains going by right now, this is... I assume the microphone's picking them up. Sometimes the microphone doesn't pick up. But if it is, and you're hearing those, that's in Japan right now. It's live. It's 8:20 in the morning. And that's how many high-speed trains they have going by one point on a two-track line. I've stood on the Northeast Corridor waiting for Amtrak so-called high-speed lines to go by, the Acelas and all that. And maybe you'll see 1.5 hour. Here you see them every couple of minutes. This, you know, I turn this on just so I can realize that we can do better. And that sort of gives me hope. It makes me frustrated because so many people try and stop you from doing better. But when you see that it is possible, that kind of propels you forward. Anyway, so that's...
I just think that if people are doing their jobs, you can be upset at how and say, you know, that isn't the right way to have done the job.
Right.
But if they're doing their job, I mean, stay in your lane to a degree. Like, you can litigate whether something was a good or good, not a good choice in that position. But you, as a bystander, as a spectator, you don't really get to know, like, you don't really know what they're dealing with, what information they had at the time, and the weight of that decision isn't on your shoulders. Now, if they're not doing the job, I think it's a lot different.
Right.
As far as pointing it out and letting people know, hey, there's a placeholder here that looks like it's doing something but isn't at all affecting the world or the situation. And that, I think, demands a little bit more, I think, heavy critique. And so, I mean, de Blasio or Cuomo, like, whether they're, and especially in an emergency situation, what individual shot needs to be called or not called, I mean, is that really for you? Yes, we have an inordinate amount of time. All of us sit and be armchair refs on how people are leading entire governments. But let's you know, sit back a little bit and let people have a little room to do their jobs before we jump down their throats about how we could do it better. I mean, really?
That's the thing. Okay, yeah. Who's doing a better job? Who, you know, apart from maybe the leaders of New Zealand and Taiwan, what governor has gotten it right in this country? Name one. I'd like to know. Because I don't think there are any. Nobody has gotten it perfect, but I would much prefer somebody telling me what's what and coming up with guidelines that hopefully will make things better. Hopefully. And if they don't, well, at least we're trying. It's so different. I can't believe how many high-speed trains they have in Japan. I just cannot believe that. Where is everybody going? It's such a small place. Compare what Cuomo has done to what Trump has done. Do you see the difference? See, I have this argument all the time because I have it with people on the right and people on the left. People on the right just hate anybody who's a Democrat. So if you read through, Google News does this all the time. They push Fox News, they push the New York Post, they push the Washington Examiner. That's all I ever see. And it's always mocking a Democratic governor for doing something, for saying something. I'll give you an example. I'm looking at it right now. Governor Cuomo brutally mocked by columnist for accepting Emmy Award. That's from Fox News. That's what Google News is pushing. there's all kinds of stories like this that aren't really relevant. I don't think he asked for an Emmy Award. Yeah, it's ridiculous, but that's what happened. Compare what somebody like Cuomo is doing to what Trump did. Trump ignored it. Trump mocked it. He made the situation worse. And if you don't acknowledge that, I don't think you're acknowledging reality. That is what he did. And more than 250,000 people are dead now in this country, mostly because we didn't do enough for them. And you can say that states didn't do enough. Yes, states didn't do enough as well. Cities didn't do enough. Households didn't do enough. You can go all the way down the line. But the higher up you go, the more power, the more money there is. We see how Trump has mishandled this from the beginning and would continue to mishandle this had he been reelected. Case in point, the vaccine, the very promising vaccine that is being promised for a month, maybe a couple of months down the road. But Trump says, New York's not going to get it because Cuomo was mean to me. Which basically is what he is saying, almost word for word. Because Cuomo had bad things to say about Trump, Trump will punish the entire state of New York. And that is supposed to be considered leadership. And people on the right are jumping on Cuomo for this, saying, how dare you? How dare you criticize Trump? Now look what you've done. You've gotten us in trouble. It's insane. But then people on the left are almost as bad because they will never acknowledge that somebody is doing a good job. Because I don't know what it is. If all leaders are bad, you know, if Bernie Sanders was in charge, he'd be criticized as not being to the left enough.
It's like a feeble attempt at overcoming bias or overcompensating for your own bias.
I don't know what it is.
Like, I can be critical of someone you would think I would ordinarily agree with. Therefore, I'm going to trip over my own self to make a point that I'm somehow able to see fault in my own or whatever. Like I said, a little bit feeble.
How many people on the left have given Trump a pass on so many issues so that they could criticize the Democrats for being hypocrites? Okay, we know they're hypocrites. We don't have to keep belaboring the point. The issue over the last 4 years has been the crises that we've been facing as a result of Trump's leadership. That is what we should all be focusing on. Not saying, there's degrees of this in everybody. We know this already. We don't need that lesson. We know Obama had all kinds of issues as well. But if you're honestly going to say that there's any comparison between the two leaders and you purport to be on the left, I don't know what you're smoking, but it's probably something you should replace. De Blasio, you mentioned De Blasio. That's another example. I cannot get this. Yeah, he's ineffective in many ways. He's a klutz. But he's certainly better than Giuliani. Can we agree on that? He's better than Bloomberg. Yet, people on the right will say he disrespects the police. People on the left will say he's in the NYPD's pocket. Which is it? You know, you both are hating the same guy and basically belittling everything he does, but you completely are at odds with each other. But that doesn't matter in the end, because you're tearing him down instead of standing behind him when he says something right. It's the same thing that happened when Obama introduced healthcare, Obamacare, when that first came out. And people on the left didn't support it because it didn't go far enough. People on the right didn't support it because it went too far. So that ended up being most people not supporting it. And that is why it has been chipped away and attacked constantly and effectively over the years. If you support something that is not perfect, well, then you can make it better. If you tear down something that's not perfect, then you don't have anything to support. And that's what I think we keep doing. So we need to learn that we don't always get what we want immediately. We don't always get to take the big step. We have to take multiple steps to get there. We have to compromise, but still hold true to what we believe in. I hope that in the next 4 years, we learn that lesson. once and for all, and keep this from ever happening again. By this, I'm referring to the current situation that we are in, which, you know, seems to be coming to an end. I sense a slight difference in the mood. I don't know if you're getting this, Kyle. But
I think I know what you're talking about.
One of those damn trains
is
coming.
It's that this feeling of like a change in the wind, in the air. That something's different. That there's reins being carefully handed.
No, well, I mean,
to other individuals.
Yeah, you're talking about what's in the headlines. I'm talking about the mood out there. Maybe it's because I'm just not seeing a lot of pickup trucks with Trump banners on them anymore. Today we saw a pickup truck with chalk written on the back window. That's what they're moving towards. It's just basically muttering things about Trump. Okay, fine, but you know, I'm not sensing as much of the anger, as much of the volume as I have over the past few months. And I'm wondering if maybe we're getting to the stage where this is just going to sort of fade out a little bit. And we can actually start living together and moving forward. And, yeah, not agreeing, because sides never agreed on these things. Maybe we just didn't realize this, but maybe it won't be so unpleasant. I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive. I just think that with what has happened in the headlines with Trump finally... Well, Trump doesn't seem to get it, but all the people around him do. Constantly losing in court, a lot of them Republican-appointed courts, Republican-appointed judges. Some senators finally speaking out. People in Trump's inner circle. The GSA, all kinds of entities saying it's over. It's over. It's time to transition to a new administration. I think maybe that changes the tone. I'd like to think that. I could be wrong, and if it turns out that we're going to have half the population claiming that the election was stolen and that Biden is not going to be a legitimate president, and if that is the mood that continues, then we are going to have issues. We are going to have problems. It's going to be very, very unpleasant. I'm just hoping that we are actually moving beyond that and back to a stage where we seem to be moving in the same direction. We don't always agree on everything, but at least it's not like it's been. And I'm also picking up that maybe this is it for Trump, at least. He's been so weakened, so embarrassed by his own behavior, that 2024 won't be a reality. And that maybe all these horrible people that have come with him also won't be a reality in 2024. And we'll move towards something a bit more civil and realistic. Realizing that we're not immune from this kind of thing. The last 4 years have taught us that. So we can get a really good lesson, a good history lesson here that, yeah, things can go bad pretty quickly if you're not careful, if you don't think these things through. I'm also thinking that no matter how the runoffs go in Georgia, maybe through executive actions and just a different perspective on the world stage and the way we're seeing, maybe we'll just have a more positive future. You know, rejoining Paris and starting deals that were canceled for no good reason, and just being looked upon as adults again in the United Nations and other places. It's a hope. It's a hope that this nightmare might finally be at an end and that we're moving in a better direction. Again, could be completely naive, but you have to have hope sometimes. And the next few weeks, I guess, will really tell. I don't see how Trump gets out of this cleanly. I don't think he should be pardoned. I think that would be a horrible thing for Biden to do. I think he should step back. Let things work themselves out, but not get involved either way. It's no comparison to when Trump was chanting "lock her up" to Hillary Clinton. No comparison, because he actually did things that were illegal, blatantly illegal, pretty much mocked the entire system, said he could do whatever he wanted. There's all kinds of evidence against him, and that should be pursued, period, by all kinds of courts everywhere. And to stop that from any side would be the height of corruption, and I think a lot of us would just lose trust immediately if something like that were to happen. But I don't see how he can just cleanly transition to Biden. He says he will never concede. He said that today, despite the fact that the transition is moving forward, despite the fact that almost everybody seems to get this now. He doesn't. I don't think he will. I don't think he's going to be there on Inauguration Day. My prediction, over the next set of holidays, around New Year's or whatever, he's going to go down to Mar-a-Lago and not come back. And kind of just not do the job. And him not doing the job, I think, is probably the best thing that could happen to us right now. Do you realize this guy is still in charge? This guy could still start the steps to end the world. This guy still has more power than pretty much anybody in the world. You know, a single terrorist act, a single military action, all sorts of things can still go horribly wrong. We have 2 months. What were they thinking? Why so long? 2 months of a rogue president who doesn't care anymore. He's already shown that he doesn't care about the pandemic, while tens of thousands of people are dying. He's playing golf. How there's no way I can see, even if you're super enthusiastic about who Trump is, how do you excuse that? There is no excuse. And if I feel optimistic in any way, it's just Biden is such a nicer guy. You know, I said before, if he was saying the same things that Trump was saying, I'd still prefer him just because he's a nicer person. And we haven't had that in a while. But not only is he a nice person, I think he's a decent person. I don't agree with much of what he says, but he treats people with respect. He listens. And we're due for that. We're so due for that. So, interesting times lie ahead. We've been saying that for a while now, but after January, maybe we can calm down.
Well, there will be a lot of emphasis on the existing health crisis, and everything indicates that as much attention as possible is going to be paid to the other priorities, returning to like climate accords and treaties, like with Iran, the nuclear treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And even this week, I think the Clear Skies or Open Seas initiative with Russia was something that we were removing ourselves from. So those types of actions will also be going on. And it is encouraging to like see the cabinet emerge with now a position for climate.
Yeah, John Kerry.
Yeah, he's going to be returning, and basically his job, which is a new position, and a really key signal that is a priority in his cabinet. That's a feat. That's a such a clear sign. And the way it was talked about, he was really honest about how this isn't enough, and talking about it being existential. And I mean, those are, I think, underrated as far as comments and signaling for the direction and the enthusiasm, the spirit,
right,
to forge ahead and not get bogged down in the various conversations and nitpicking that goes on around green or sustainable issues and policies. It's just a priority, first and foremost. I mean, that alone sets the stage to go through and meet and re-meet and revisit every single issue and problem and reevaluate all of it in a continuous way. But that's the kind of encouraging thing in a couple words. And also, like, speaking to corruption as a priority for, like, DHS and for domestic and international security, those are other indicators that, like, just flouting the law or, like, having enough money or enough lawyers to just do whatever you want, like, it's not going to fly. Mm-hmm. That's not fair.
Right.
And that's just as antithetical to the sort of equality or the like, free marketplace as monopolistic practices and so forth. And I think those little signs we're going to hear a lot more about, even though it's the background of this, like, health crisis. So that encourages me a bit.
I know there's frustration at there not being enough progressive voices in appointments so far. And I hear that, but I also think that progressives do have Biden's ear. I think they will have several seats at the table. So I'm not particularly worried about that. It's important to have these conversations, but it's also important to at least start moving in a better direction and critiquing the changes that happen as we actually start moving in that administration. But right now, setting things up so that you have qualified people that are going to undo much of the damage, and there's going to be so much that needs to be done as far as undoing the damage that has been done over the past 4 years. That's going to take a while. That's going to take unity. And we need to stick together on that. And remember to vote. Keep voting. Keep voting in the direction that you want to head. Now remember, this election was almost stolen. What Trump and his cohorts were doing, if it wasn't so comically inept, it would have worked. It would have worked. And look at what they were trying to do. I mean, these Giuliani press conferences are just... you couldn't write an SNL skit better than that. Hair dye streaming down his face. I don't even want to get into that. It's just... it's sad. But this is how unhinged these people are. You have a lawyer basically spouting forth with conspiracy theories, completely accepted by the team until it's ordered that she be labeled as crazy, then all of a sudden she's out, even though she's saying the same things
and
that the rest of the team
there?
Is saying.
Yeah, why was she there?
Why are any of them there?
If she's not on the team, why would... yeah, how did she get into the room, let alone on the stage?
But these people were trying to steal the election any way they could, to basically have every vote discounted because, and fill in the blank. And literally being told that if you're asking for the evidence and you don't understand the case, which actually is a pretty true statement because evidence is what works against them. So if you think evidence is going to help them, then yeah, you don't understand their case. But consider that Trump was trying to basically get rid of all the votes in places like Detroit, Philadelphia, black majority cities. Basically, he said last week voter fraud in Detroit is rampant and has been for many years. Really? Any evidence at all? I mean, these kinds of statements were said so many times in so many places, but the goal was so clear, so disgustingly clear. And whether it's local Trump wannabes like Lee Zeldin or his inner core, his family, his lawyers, the cowardly senators that have yet to speak up against him. Remember who these people are. Remember what they try to do when things don't go their way. You know, it hurts when you lose an election. Believe me, I know that. 4 years ago, listen to our shows. And we decried the unfairness of the system, the Electoral College and gerrymandering and all sorts of things like that.
We predicted the incompetence and inability to fulfill the duties, but we were aware that they were going to be filled in whatever capacity. We just had to sit back and watch.
Yeah, and we lost the election. We thought America lost the election. And, yeah, sure, if a recount is possible, do a recount. But going from court to court, trying to get things thrown out because it benefits you, how do you, think of any other situation where you can just cherry-pick issues so that you get your way eventually. When you have a lot of money, yeah, I guess that's what you can do. And that's what Trump is doing. He's continuing to raise funds to not only pay for this, but to pay for his entire campaign. If you look at the fine print, that's where the money is really going, to pay for the enormous debt. That's how he operates. So, knowing what these people tried to do and knowing who they are, I think that is a very, very important thing to focus on in the time ahead. But interesting side note to this. There's a super PAC with ties to Roger Stone, remember him? And they're calling for Trump supporters to punish Republicans. For Trump supporters to punish Republicans by sitting out Georgia's runoff elections in January, or writing in Trump's name instead. Yeah, the most aggressive call to boycott or cast protest ballots in the two runoff cases has so far come from a dormant pro-Trump super PAC with ties to Roger Stone that unveiled a new initiative to retaliate against the Republican Party's supposed turncoats by handing control of the Senate to the Democrats. This is what we are dealing with right now. And this is what Republicans are dealing with right now. They have a real problem with people like this that are so fanatically behind Trump.
They'll sacrifice themselves to make a statement about loyalty.
They don't view it as themselves. They view it as an actual dividing line between them and these turncoat Republicans who don't really represent. And the thing that's scary is that more people seem to be supporting the Trump part of the Republican Party. In fact, they are, very clearly, than anything more reasonable. So if I was a Republican, I'd be really, really worried right now. If I was a Republican that a traditional Republican, I guess, is the only way to say it.
Well, it's not the way it should work. I mean, you have, like, the parties, but they're not who you are as a politician or a leader. And now it's, like, hijacked the essence of individual thought and, like, your individual constituents' concerns and your impression of that. Because a lot of being a politician is gauging what's good for the community you represent, what interests impacts will make a difference ostensibly, so you do a good job and get reelected. I mean, ideally. And I think it's removing that autonomy from an individual politician. When you're a platform is one thing. This is what the party's going to agree to do to address this issue, or this kind of legislation has our support broadly. That's one thing. But to dictate every single decision that it must match a criteria or a sentiment, really, I think it just dumbs down who your politicians are, because if they can tick the right boxes or navigate that or finesse it in the right way, they're in good. I mean, that doesn't really short circuits their actual representing of constituents, and I think does a greater disservice in ultimately. And that's right there, the self-sacrifice. I mean, that's the craziness of it. I think it's hilarious if it wasn't so sad.
Well, honestly, I don't think they have the guts to go through with it. If you're a Trump person, prove me wrong, and boycott the election in Georgia, and then I'll admit I was wrong. So that's going to be interesting coming up. We'll talk more about that in the weeks ahead. Hey, did you hear this story in Brooklyn? A secret Hasidic wedding with 7,000 people. How do you keep that secret? But they had a wedding with 7,000 people inside a huge hall in Williamsburg, featuring dancing, singing, no masks. I swear, the idiocy that some people have, and the contempt for following any kind of common sense regulation. Of course, these are the same people that were waving Trump banners and standing behind him. This is what our president has done. He's encouraged this kind of ignorance. Well, they won't soon be doing that again because Mayor de Blasio gave him a $15,000 fine. I mean, do you realize $15,000 is probably a fraction of what that hall costs to rent? Come on. You can do better than that. How about $15,000 a person? How about that? That's a fine. A message needs to be sent, you know? This isn't just going to affect the people who are in the wedding hall. It affects people all throughout New York if you have come into any contact with one of those 7,000 people.
It should be on a scale depending on the size, the capacity. I think you're right there. If it's like over, I don't know, even any number sounds like a lot these days. Over 2,000, 4,000, does it really make a difference when you get up to 7? That's a huge event. That's probably the biggest event that's been...
All this outrage, I keep hearing this everywhere, of like, oh, is Cuomo going to tell me how many people I can have over for my house? It's like, well, you know what, if you were abusing people in your house, you could hear the screams from the street. Would you maybe call the cops on that? How is this different? How is this different when it's a deadly disease... And you just getting together with people who don't live in your house could wind up killing them. Yeah, we can't see it, but the numbers don't lie. And being ignorant about it is no excuse. So, yeah, it sucks that we have to do this, but it sucks even more that you're too stupid to realize how to deal with this smartly to prevent it from getting worse.
Well, so also,
if we have to fight you, we will fight you to fight the disease. So I don't think it's a problem. I don't think if you see a huge number of people at someone's house, yeah, report it. I'm not a fan of doing that, but I'd rather people stay alive.
I think it also helps do the thinking for people. Like if it is a appreciable fine, people won't have to do the tough thinking of like whether this should be risked or not. They'll just say, this isn't worth the rush. And honestly, that's my question. What is the rush?
Yeah.
Why do you have to get married right now? Can it wait?
I'm talking about Thanksgiving,
months?
But yeah, you don't have to.
Or Thanksgiving, yeah. I mean, what? I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to.
It's a schedule.
Decide
you
other people's wedding. A lot of people's weddings have been put off. I know wedding photographers are having a tough time and going through a lot in my. Secret connection to the photography world. That yeah, we're all suffering, but is it really worth the risk, especially for an event that size, and on down to things like Thanksgiving? At least take precautions, and we all know what that is. I don't have to go through it, but I just don't understand the rush, the great rush to be participating in all this stuff, especially at that kind of scale, look, knowing the risks right at this very moment.
Take our advice from last week. Postpone it 6 months, May 27th. It's a Thursday. It's right before Memorial Day weekend. Great time. Spring Thanksgiving, hashtag. You know, we'll have fun in the spring instead of in the autumn. And it'll be good. It'll be different. And a new tradition might be born. But we have to do the smart thing. It shouldn't always be a debate. People who have stuck together in other places, even Wuhan, they did the right thing after a while. Yeah, like everybody, they started off wrong. They learned, and now Wuhan is a lot safer than Long Island. Think about that. So this thing can be dealt with if we're intelligent. And unfortunately, we're spending most of our time battling the people who refuse to act intelligently. All right, let me close off with... so many of these trains in Japan. Why can't we have high-speed trains like they do? They're all going about 200 miles an hour, too.
We will.
When? When are we going to have them?
Just another couple days.
Amtrak is in shambles.
Well,
the MTA, they're talking about cutting subway service in half, and it might not ever recover. I don't know why it can't recover. Maybe because people's habits will change.
There's probably a meeting about this right now. Don't worry. The cavalry is coming.
Let me end on a positive note. You hear about this monolith they found in the desert in Utah?
No.
They found, just like in 2001, they found a metal monolith just in the middle of the desert. Just there. Just in the...
Whoa.
Yeah, they don't know how it got there. Some helicopter pilots just happened to see it, and they kept the location secret until some wise guy on Reddit figured out where it was, based on the color of the rocks and all kinds of GPS information.
What alien civilization is it from?
We don't know yet. We don't know. It's just this metal monolith that's just sitting there in the desert.
Are we sure?
And it's heavy, too, so it's not something you could just carry out there.
How do we know it isn't like a 5G antenna or something?
Well, it's something that hasn't been there for more than 10 years. That much they haven't been able to figure out.
Okay.
Because and using Google Earth, they figure that out. Because
how
it wasn't there, and then it was there.
What are the dimensions?
Well, I don't know. I don't have all that.
But it's heavy?
You're always asking me these questions. I don't have all the information, but it's...
Okay.
It's basically if you stood on someone's shoulders, it's about that height and about that width.
Okay.
So hopefully that answers your questions. Hey, we're out of time. Again, people, please, Thanksgiving time, spend it by yourself. I've done that. It's, it's different. Treat yourself well. Have fun. Do whatever you want to do and realize that we're going to get past this. Stay inside your house with your family. Don't feel obligated to visit other people. Yeah, maybe there'll be hurt feelings. Hurt feelings can heal. COVID does not always heal. And we don't want to do anything that might make things worse. Again, blame us if you have to. OTW at 2600.com. We'll field the angry letters from your relatives and friends, and we'll do something else 6 months from now or whenever you feel is more convenient. You know what? We don't have enough time to play Alice's Restaurant. I really wanted to play that. That's a Thanksgiving thing, and Finn won't let us do that for sure. Let's start a new tradition, though. I think I found a different Thanksgiving-themed food-type song, and we'll just go out with that, and we will see you in 2 weeks. Say goodnight, Kyle.
Good night, Kyle.
And let me say goodnight, Kyle, as well. See you next time.
Satan gave me a taco and it made me really sick. The chicken was all raw and the grease was mighty thick. The rice was all rancid and the beans were so hard. I was getting kind of dizzy, eating all the lard. There was aphids on the lettuce, and I ate every one. And after I was done, the salsa melted off my tongue. Pieces of tortilla got stuck in my throat, and the stains on my clothes burned a hole through my coat. My stomach was trembling, I broke out in a rash. I was so dry and thirsty, and I didn't have no cash. So I went and found a hose, tore off all my clothes, turned on the water, and it shot right up my nose. Some old lady came along, and she thought I was a freak. So she beat me with a handbag till I could hardly speak. I was lying there naked, my body badly bruised in a pool of my own blood. Unconscious and confused, when the cops came and got me and threw me in their van. When I woke up on the ceiling and I couldn't find my hand, they took me to the judge, his eyes are glowing red. The courtroom was filled with witches and the dead. Well, the sheriff was a hellhound with fangs and claws. The prisoners were tied up and chained to the walls. The air was getting thick, the smoke was getting thicker. The judge read the verdict, said, cut off his head. Well, they placed me on the altar and raised up the axe. My head was about to explode when I noticed the marshal stacks. I noticed all the smoke machines, cameras and the lights. Some guy with a microphone running around dancing in tights. And I noticed the crew and the band playing down below. And I realized I was in a rock city. So I went and joined the band. Then I went out on tour. And I smoked a lot of heroin. Then I passed out in the north. I made out with the groupies. Started fires backstage. Made